Parashat Ba'alotcha. So, we've learned Bamidbar. Naso, I don't think we had a class on. Or maybe we did, yeah. We learned Naso together. Now we're holding by the third Parashat Ba'alotcha. As usual, we'll try to quickly go over the Parsha at a glance, and then try to understand it piece by piece. The Parsha begins with a commandment to Aaron, something which is unusual here. Theoretically, we've finished the commandments about the functioning of the Mishkan. Sefer Shmos told us how to build the Mishkan. Sefer Vayikra told us what's supposed to be done in the Mishkan. And suddenly in Parshas Ba'aloscha, we have the laws of how to light the candles. They didn't have candles. They had, I guess you'd call it oil lamps. They had a lamp which had cups with oil and wick inside. And after that, we're told that the levim are supposed to be taken and purified, a whole procedure. And from this point on, the levim are going to start their service. And they do the procedure in our parsha. We have a commandment describing how the levim are supposed to function, from what age until what age, from age 25 to 50. And then they go over to other jobs. And then we're holding by Shlishi. Then we have a commandment which really happened long before the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. Sefer Bamidbar began 2 months into the second year. Sefer Bamidbar began in the Sefer begins by Dever Hashem al Moshe. The beginning of Sefer Bamidbar identifies the period as the Rosh Chodesh Iyar. And in Shlishi we jump back to Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Or sometime in Chodesh Nisan, and we have the commandment to bring the Korban Pesach, which we'll have to discuss why they need another commandment. When Hashem told them in Mitzrayim to bring the Korban Pesach, they were told they would do it for generations. And they performed as they were told, they did the Korban Pesach. There were people who were impure, and they came complaining. They said, why shouldn't we bring Korban Pesach? And then we have the laws of Pesach Sheni, that Hashem tells us a person who's impure on the 14th of Nisan, when he would bring the Korban Pesach, he's obligated to bring, a month later, on the 14th of Iyar, Pesach Sheni. We're told that Gerim also have the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, and that brings us to Revi. Revi gives us an introduction to the way we traveled. Now, we had seen in Bamidbar the way the nation of Israel was set up with their flag surrounding the Aron, the setup of the camp. But here we have a more detailed description of how the people traveled. We're told that there was a nun, there was a cloud that covered the Mishkan, and at night there was looked like some fire covering the Mishkan, and that cloud would lead us wherever it camped. That's where we would camp, and that's how Hashem guided us where to go. And sometimes we'd camp for a long time, and sometimes we'd camp for a short time. The cloud would lead us. And then Hashem tells Moshe to be like a king and to set up for himself 2 trumpets of silver. And those trumpets are going to be used. The Kohanim blew them to gather the people and to notify the people when they're to go, and also to gather the leaders for an assembly of just the Nesim. And now that all of this has been established, we commute. We take our first journey from Sinai. Meaning, from Sefer Shmos, from the time we camped at Har Sinai, through Sefer Vayikra, through the beginning of Ma'aloscha till here, through the beginning of the Chumash, of the Sefer Bamidbar till here, we've been camped at Sinai, and now this is the first time we're departing, we're leaving Sinai. Theoretically, we're going in the direction of the land of Israel. Theoretically, we're supposed to be there in a few days. And so on the 20th of Iyar, we travel. We leave Har Sinai, and we travel the way we were told, with the trumpets blowing, and the Shevet Yehuda leads the way. And we travel leaving Har Sinai, which is something that we did wrong. We were happy to leave Har Sinai. At this point, we have a conversation between Moshe and his father-in-law, who has 7 names, Yisro, Chovav, and he asks him not to leave. And Yisro disagrees, and he tells him, if you come with us, everything will be good for you. And Yisro says, no, I'm going back home. And Yisro leaves. And then we have a famous parsha of Vayhi Binsoa Aaron, a description of how we traveled. That when the Aaron traveled, Moshe Rabbeinu would say, Kumo Hashem, V'yafutsu Oivecho, V'yonusu Misanecha Mipanecho, what we say when we open the Aaron. This is a parsha on its own. And this really belongs earlier, where we described how the Jewish people would travel. That's where this parsha belongs, but it's printed here. We'll discuss why later. And we have two upside down nuns separating it. And it's treated as its own parsha, so much so that sometimes we say the Chumash has seven svarim. Usually we say Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Because of this parsha, sometimes we say Shiva Chumshei Torah. That the Chumash has seven parshas, because you have Sefer Bamidbar until this parsha, and then Sefer Bamidbar till then. So we add another two. Sefer Bamidbar counts for three parshas. And then the nation complains. Hashem hears them complaining, and the fire comes down and consumes the edges of the camp. A lot of people get killed. Moshe Rabbeinu davens for the people, and the fire gets buried. That's over, and we have a new problem. We have the Asafsuf, those that joined the Jewish people, and they start whining and complaining. We wish we would have meat. We remember the fish we got free in Mitzrayim. We remember all those vegetables. And now all we have is this man. And then the Pasuk describes to us how wonderful the man really was and how Hashem gave it to us with the greatest care. And Moshe Rabbeinu hears the nation complaining about their families. We'll explain that when we get there. And Hashem got upset, and Moshe also saw it badly. So Moshe tells Hashem, why did you put me in charge of this nation? Why did I not find favor in your eyes? Did I raise this nation, or did I carry them in my womb? Are they my children that I'm responsible for them, like one carries a baby? Where am I going to bring them this meat that they're asking me for? They're all crying, give us meat and we'll eat. And I can't carry this nation on my own. And if you do this to me, so I'd rather be dead. Why should I see myself unable to do what I'm supposed to do? Hashem tells Moshe, firstly, Hashem responds to Moshe Rabbeinu's complaint, gather 70 people, we're going to establish the 70 Zakenim, and they're going to get Nevuah together with Moshe. They go out of the camp, they get Nevuah together with Moshe Rabbeinu, and then Hashem says, I'm going to give them meat, and they won't eat only for one day, I'm going to give them 30 days worth of meat. They're going to eat, the Pasuk says, Ad asher yetzei mi'apchem, till it comes out of their noses. Which means they're going to eat till they're so satiated they won't want anymore. And that was a punishment, really. Those who ate it died. Hashem sent a special bird called the slav, and the people gobbled it down, and they died from it. We also had the establishment of the 70 Zakenim, and then we have two people who weren't part of the 70. They weren't out there with the 70, and suddenly they start prophesizing. So they say a prophecy, Moshe is going to die, and his student, Yoshua, is the one that's going to take over. And Yoshua gets upset. He says, put him in jail, Moshe my Rebbe, Moshe my master. And Moshe says, no, well, you're jealous for me. I wish everyone were Nevim. Moshe Rabbeinu returns to the camp, and the people get the slav, and they die, and they get buried. And at the end of the parsha, we have the difficult story of Miriam and Aaron speaking about Moshe Rabbeinu, something about him and his wife. His wife is called the Kushis, which literally means a black person. And they say that Hashem only speak to Moshe. Hashem also spoke to us. Hashem heard this. And Moshe was a big Anav, greater Anav than anyone else. And Hashem suddenly said to Moshe, Aaron and Miriam, go out of the camp. And Hashem came down and he called out to Aaron and Moshe, and they came forth. And Hashem says, you should know, when I show up to other Nevi'im, I show up in a dream. Moshe is different than all the other Nevi'im. Behold, Beisi Ne'emonu, he's trustworthy in throughout my house. Pe el pe, I speak to Moshe Rabbeinu mouth to mouth, like a friend. He sees me clearly. Hashem was upset at them, and Hashem left, and Miriam had tzaras. Aaron saw that she had tzaras, and he told Moshe, please, don't hold this against us. Don't let her be like a dead person. She's your sister. You can't have her die. You can't have her punished like this. And Moshe Rabbeinu davens to Hashem, his short prayer, Kel no refo no lo. And Hashem tells Moshe, I'm not going to cure her right away, because if her father would have been upset at her, if he would have spat in her face, she would have been embarrassed for 7 days. So for me, certainly she should be embarrassed 7 days. She has to stay 7 days out of the camp. and then we'll take her back in. So Miriam was left out of the camp for 7 days, and the whole nation waited. They didn't travel until Miriam returned to the camp. She was purified, and then they traveled and camped in the desert of Paran, what's otherwise known as Kadesh Barnea, and they're on the verge of entering the land of Israel. And that's where the parsha ends. We're holding on the verge of entering. And of course we know the next parsha is going to begin, that the people are on the verge of entering, and they say, wait, let's send spies. And that brings our downfall. But we're going to see that this parsha already shows how we were going downhill from the time we left Sinai. The leaving of Har Sinai was itself done improperly, and from there on we kept on going down. So the parsha begins. Hashem tells Moshe, tell Aaron that he has to light the candles. And when he lights the candles, there's a special halacha about how the... We shouldn't call them candles, I'm sorry. Ner does not mean candle. Modern Hebrew, ner means a candle. Ner, Rashi translates in the Gemara, is kreuzel in French. Ner is a lamp. It's a utensil. It's a vessel that has oil in it and a wick. And when they lit the menorah, so the menorah was built. It... We'll draw it.
What's the French word?
Kreuzel.
Kreuzel?
I don't know French. I just know Rashi. The menorah was built up either like this. Right? So we have three, we'll call them poles for now, standing on each side and one in the middle. And there were all kinds of designs, which we'll discuss when we get to Eden Truma, how the menorah was built. The menorah was built of one piece solid gold. Most things that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to build in the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu understood and gave over the instructions to Bezalel, and it was done. But the menorah was one of the things that Moshe Rabbeinu had a very hard time with. There are three things in the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time with. The first thing is the first commandment we were given, Kiddush HaChodesh. We're told what a new moon is supposed to look like, what the witnesses are supposed to testify on. And over there it says, HaChodesh HaZeh Lachem. This month is for you, the new month, the first month. And Chazal say, whenever it says Zeh is superfluous. Zeh means this, so you don't need the word this. You're saying the month, obviously we know which month we're talking about, is the first month, the month they're standing by, which was Nisan. Why does it have to say HaZeh, this month is the first month? So Chazal teaches, whenever it says Zeh, it means something you could point to with your finger. That's why when we lift the Torah, we say Zos HaTorah Asher Sam Moshe, we all point with our finger. Whenever we say Zeh or Zos, in the same Shoresh, we point to something. So Hashem told Moshe, HaChodesh HaZeh, this month, what does it mean this month? This moon that you see, the way you see it now, that's how you make a new moon. That's the moon you have to see in order to know that it's a new month. Same thing is true over here with the menorah. It says, V'zeh Ma'aseh HaMenorah. This is how the menorah was done. So Chazal say, why does it have to say Zeh? Because Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time understanding how he's supposed to take one block of solid gold and make out of it the menorah. So one pshat says Hashem showed him. There was he saw the figure of a menorah in the fire. Another pshat says that he threw a block, a chunk of gold into the fire, and Hashem made it. That's why it says Maaseh HaMenorah, the making of the menorah, because we didn't really make the menorah. We couldn't figure out how to do it. There are different pshatim exactly how it was done, but bottom line, Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time with it. And the last thing are the shrutzim, the different creepy, crawly creatures which were not allowed to eat. So Moshe Rabbeinu had a hard time figuring out which was which, and Hashem showed it. So in this parsha, we begin with Aaron getting the commandment. Hashem tells Moshe to tell Aaron that he's supposed to light the menorah. And when he lights the menorah, he should do it in a fashion that all the arches, all the poles that stick out of the menorah should face towards the main part of the menorah. What's the main part of the menorah? That's the center pole. That's the center pole that comes from the base, from the center of the menorah. So all of them, all the wicks would point in that direction. So you had light. Usually you want the light to extend outwardly. And here, the wicks, the flames were all pointing inside to symbolize that this menorah, even though it's in the Holy of Holies, and it was lit at night, according to the Rambam, it was also lit every morning, but almost... Like all Rishonim, most of the Rishonim don't learn like the Rambam. The Pashup Shan, the Pasuk is that at night the menorah was lit, and in the morning they would fix the wicks. The Rambam learns that part of fixing the wicks in the morning was lighting it also in the morning. That's the Rambam Shita. In the morning it was also lit. But Pashup Shat, you see a menorah lit at night, you think Hashem wants light in the Holy of Holies, or in the Holy. So Hashem says, no, I don't need it for light. I'm going to give you light, like we see in this week's Parsha. Hashem had a pillar of light over the Mishkan, giving light to the Jewish people. So Hashem doesn't need us to give him light, but Hashem gave us a mitzvah to light the menorah inside the Holy, the Kodesh. And the way it was lit was with the wicks facing inside. So Aaron was told that when he lights the menorah, beha'aloschas aniros, when you uplift the wicks, what does it mean? Or the lamps. What does it mean, uplift? So Chazal say two pshat. And one is that there were a set of steps leading up to the menorah. So he himself was uplifted. He walked up to light the menorah. And the other pshat is that he would hold the flame by the wick until the wick caught fire on its own. And that's something which we're supposed to do also when we light Shabbos candles. Ideally, if it's possible, you have to get a longer match for it, because today it takes time for the wicks to catch on. But when you light Shabbos candles, ideally you're supposed to leave the match there until the wick of the Shabbos candle is, most of it is lighting on its own. And the same thing by Hanukkah. We try to leave the flame there until we see the flame on its own. And that's a way of honor, so that when you take away the flame, it doesn't automatically die down. But rather, the flame remains constant. You leave it when most of the wick is already lit, and then the flame will remain constant even when we pull away the match. So Aaron did as he was told. He lit the menorah the way Moshe Rabbeinu told him. Now, just a point to notice, the top cups that held the oil were removable. They were able to take those out and clean them, and then they'd put them in. The rest of the menorah, it seems, was made of one solid piece of gold. What's this doing here? So Chazal tell us that in the end of the last parsha we saw that the heads of each tribe, the Nesiim, brought forth offerings when they established the Mishkan. They built the Mishkan, and everyone got to bring their own offering. Everyone brought their offerings in the end of Parshas Noso. Aaron sees that each Shevet, each tribe, has a representative bringing offerings, and his tribe, the Kohanim, they don't have anyone representing them. So Aaron felt bad. So Hashem said, don't worry, yours is better than theirs. And that's why right after their offerings, Hashem told Aaron what's going to be his. He's going to be able to bring forth every day, every evening, he's taking care of the menorah, he's bringing an offering before Hashem. Chazal also say that this hints to the fact that Aaron was told yours is greater than theirs, that his family was ultimately going to take over in the time of Hashmonah, that this is a hint for the time of Hanukkah. Next, Hashem tells Moshe to take the Levim. We've seen that the Levim have gone through a lot of preparation. Until now we saw that the Levim were counted, and the Bechoros were counted, and the Levim were told they're in place of the firstborns, and then the Levim were redeemed in place of the firstborns. And then the Levim were commanded, they were told what they're going to have to do to watch the Beis HaMikdash, the Mishkan. And then the Levim were given the wagons with which they're going to carry everything. But until now they haven't done anything. Now Hashem tells Moshe, now we're going to bring it all into play. Now they're going to do it. And so, now the Levim have to be purified. Now their purification was about a six-step procedure. Firstly, they were sprinkled with the water of the Parah Adumah. Secondly, their hair was shaved. Their head was shaved, their beards were shaved, their armpits were shaved. Every place on the body that there's a cluster of hair was shaved, meaning their arms didn't have to be shaved because there isn't a cluster of hair. But everything else was shaved. And the reasoning behind this, we have a very interesting and very important Rashi over here. Rashi quotes, every Rashi is important, but this one has halachic ramifications today. Rashi quotes from Rav Moshe Darshan that the Levim were coming in place of the Bechoros, in place of the firstborns. Why weren't the firstborns taking care of the jobs assisting the Kohanim, the tasks the Levim were now going to undertake? Because the firstborns had served the Egel. When one serves Avodah Zarah, so then that's one becomes impure, just like a person that has Tzaras is impure. So the purification of a person that has Tzaras is that we remove all of these hairs from him. So too the Levim, who are coming in place of the Bechoros, the firstborns, who served Avodah Zarah, which is like Tzaraas, had to have all their hair shaven. So this sounds like, wow, loop after loop. This is compared to this, this compared to that. Well, this has halachic ramifications. There used to be a minhag, I don't know if it's still existent today. I'm saying used to be because I know it was, and I don't know if it still is. That if a Jew decides that he's going to convert, and then he comes back and says, no, I changed my mind, I want to be Jewish again. So then we say, you're starting again. You went to serve other gods. So you're just like the Levim were here. You're coming back. So we'll take you back, but you have to shave all your hair and go to the mikveh and tovel. Just like the Levim over here had to purify themselves because they're coming in place of one that went with other gods. And this halacha is brought in the Shulchan Aruch by Gerim, that they had a custom in certain cities that Gerim, when they became Gerim, would shave all their hair before they did the tevila. And this is also brought in the laws of Chol HaMoed, the Ramah brings it, that we know that a person isn't supposed to shave on Chol HaMoed, the idea being that he shaves in honor of the Yom Tov, he shaves earlier. What happens if he wasn't able to shave before Yom Tov? So then we say he's allowed to shave on Chol HaMoed. So the Ramah says, what about a person like this? He does tshuva. So do we say, you should have done tshuva 2 days ago before Yom Tov, and then you could have shaven? No, we say, you could shave now and tovel now. Because until a person did this, the cities that had this custom, that required a person who was chozer b'tshuva from serving other gods to shave all his hair before he does tvila, those cities, they had the custom, we don't consider him a Jew. We don't count him for a minion. We don't let him participate in all our communal acts of serving Hashem. So he can't really do much. So he's stuck. So we say, let him shave his hair and tovel even though it's Chol HaMoed. Not on Yom Tov, of course, but on Chol HaMoed, yes. So the second step that the Levim went through was that their hair was shaven. The third step was that they toiveled, they went into a mikveh, they purified their body and they took their clothing to the mikveh. They bathed their clothing and they made them pure. And then they had the korbanos that they brought, two korbanos. Now, they had to lean on the korbanos, that's halacha on every korban that's brought for forgiveness. We lean on it, we do smicha. That's to show I'm putting my weight on the animal as though this animal's coming instead of me. And then the Jewish people leaned on the Levim. So you had a gathering of the whole Jewish people and a small cluster of Levim there. Small, I mean, in proportion. And the Jewish people leaned on the Levim as though to say, you're coming instead of me. My family was supposed to have a firstborn who was doing this service in the Mishkan, and you're instead of me. And then the Pasuk says that Aaron had to wave them. We have halacha by karbanos, by sacrifices. Before they're brought forth to Hashem, we lift them and wave them. We wave them in all the directions. So, yeah, similar to lulav and etrog, right. Only sometimes it was done that the kohen put his hand and then the owner put his hand and they held it together and one had the hand on top of the other and then they shake it in all directions. So these levim are being offered by the Jewish people, so to speak, in their place. So they were shook. They were lifted and waved in each direction. So pashup chan, the pasuk, means literally they were shook. There's an interesting pshat that Rav Sadia Gaon says that they weren't literally shook. You couldn't shake them like you shake a korban. But rather, Aaron took them and walked them through the Mishkan, and they had a procession with music playing before them, and that was the equivalent of doing knufa, of being shook. Just like by a korban. You lift and shake it, that was the way they did it with the people. That's what Rav Sadia Gaon says. Okay, so the Levim are told to take the place of the Bechoros, the firstborns, and they're supposed to start working. What are the Levim's jobs? So the Levim were responsible for the gates, watching the things. They're responsible for assisting the Kohanim. Their job was to surround the Mishkan to make sure the Jews don't come too close, because we have a tendency to want to come close to things that are holy. They had a job to sing. They would sing in the Mishkan when certain parts of the carbon were brought. When we'd pour the wine, then the Levim would sing. And they had special ways of singing and making music. Now, we're told that the Levim were supposed to start service at the age of 25. And if you recall, we saw last week, I think, that the Levim are supposed to start service at the age of 30. So from here, Chazal learned out that they spent 5 years learning the laws, the procedure, what they're supposed to do, what they're permitted and what they're not permitted to do. And then at the age of 30, they'd start. And that from there we learn out that a person is supposed to give learning a 5-year chance. If after 5 years he sees he's not making it anywhere, then he realizes that maybe he has to figure something else out. But until a person's given it a 5-year shot, he can't know if he's successful or not. So there's a 5-year minimum we learn out from the Levim. 5 years means 5 years, putting the time in and focusing and learning. At the age of 50, the Levim had to stop service. But this is a mitzvah only for the time they were in the desert. That means they had to stop the service of the heavy lifting, the carrying which they did in the time that they were traveling in the desert. So there were things that the Levim had to carry on their shoulders. So when a Levi reached the age of 50, in the time of the desert, they had to stop carrying the things on their shoulders. Everything else they could do. They could continue watching the gates, they could continue singing if they had a good voice. If they lost their voice, they can't sing. That was the only thing that puzzled them. Even a Levi that had a Baal Mum, even if they had a blemish, we know that if a Kohen has a blemish, he can't serve in the Beis HaMikdash or in the Mishkan. If he's missing an arm, if he's blind. What?
Not just the Kohen Agadol?
No. Certain blemishes, any Kohen can't serve it. So the Levim, even if they had a blemish, they could serve and they could continue serving beyond the age of 50, so long as they could do it. They could even help load and unload the wagons. But carrying on their shoulders, carrying the heavy beams and everything else, that they couldn't do in the time of the desert, once we came to the land of Israel, so they served. Because all the service that they did was, they were kosher to do, regardless of their age. Now the Pasuk tells us, we're holding by Shlishi, Kapitel Tes, Pasuk Aleph, Hashem tells Moshe, when they were in the desert of Sinai, the second year after they left Mitzrayim, in the first month, meaning the month of Nisan. And this is what we mentioned 2 weeks ago, that this is a clear proof that the Torah is not written in chronological order. What Chazal teaches, Ein mukdam u'muchor b'Torah, in the Torah you can't know whether something was earlier or later, depending on whether it was written earlier or later. Things were written out of order, things were written in context, things were written by the context we were supposed to take them. We do say smuchim, Hashem put things in the Torah next to one another, so we should learn out things from that. But the order in which the Torah was written was not to tell us a chronological order. We see that clearly here, like we mentioned before. Now we're jumping back a month. We're going back to the first month, the month of Nisan. And Hashem tells Moshe, tell the Jewish people, they have to bring a Korban Pesach. Now let's think back. A year before this, they brought a Korban Pesach. Where were they a year before this? They were in Mitzrayim. That was the year when Hashem killed the firstborns. That was an exceptional Pesach. They weren't sitting around and keeping Yom Tov. They were traveling that Pesach. That was the first Pesach. And then they were told, when you come to the land of Israel, you got to do this forever. You always got to keep the Pesach. But what happens to the time they're in the desert in between? Hashem never addressed that. Hashem told them, when you come to the land of Israel, you got to keep Pesach. So now they're in the desert. They've spent a year. They came to Har Sinai shortly after leaving Mitzrayim. They counted the 49 days till the 6th day of Sivan. They got the Torah, right? Shavuos, we just had it, right? Yesterday. So they got the Torah. They spent nearly a year, 11 months and 20 days, at Har Sinai, learning the Torah, building the Mishkan, getting everything ready. And now they hit Nisan the following year. They're still by the mountain of Sinai. And Hashem tells Moshe they should bring the Korban Pesach when the 14th comes, like they're supposed to. Moshe told the Jewish people, and they brought the Korban Pesach. This is the only Korban Pesach that was brought throughout the 40 years in the desert. Until we entered land of Israel, no one brought a Korban Pesach. Because they needed to have the right climate in order to do it and not get sick from it. And the 40 years that they were traveling in the desert, we're going to see in next week's parasha, was a punishment. And part of the punishment, so because we sinned, there was no northern wind. And the northern wind is the one that is calm and brings cool air, and the child could get better after he has a bris milah. So until this point, until next week's parasha that they sinned, they had the northern wind. So here they could bring a Korban Pesach. But once they sinned and the northern wind stopped blowing, so they could no longer give their children a bris milah. And when a person has a child or a servant at home that he has not yet given him a bris milah to, or he has not yet given him a milah, a bris milah, then he cannot bring a Korban Pesach. And that's why, even though this parsha seems to be telling us laws, the parsha is already telling us the downhill slope of the Jewish people from the time they left Sinai. Here they're holding the last month there at Har Sinai, and we're told they brought the Korban Pesach, but we know this is the only Korban Pesach they brought throughout the 40 years they were in the desert. Only Shevet Levi risked their lives and said, we're doing a bris milah, regardless we're doing it. The rest of the Jewish people said, no, we have a way out. We're allowed to say it's dangerous. We're not giving our children a bris milah. They could have given a bris milah, but they chose to take the easy way out. And they didn't. Now Hashem told Moshe, tell the Jewish people they should bring the Korban Pesach b'mo'ado, in its proper time. And we learn out from that that year Pesach fell out on Shabbos. So they were wondering, should we bring Korban Pesach on Shabbos or not? Pesach fell out on Matzei Shabbos, but the day before Pesach, when we bring the Korban Pesach, the 14th, fell out on Shabbos. So Hashem said, yes, when I tell you b'mo'ado, you bring it in its proper time, that means even if it falls out on Shabbos. And we also learn out from this a special halacha, that tumah hutra b'tzibur. Hashem told us, bring it in its proper time, even if the whole Jewish people are impure, everyone, the Nasi died. So everyone has to honor the Nasi. Everyone went to his Levaya, and everyone became impure. So now they want to bring a Korban Pesach. How do they do it? So we're told, no, for a Korban Pesach, Hashem told us, b'mo'ado, you have to bring it, even if everyone's impure. This takes us back to what we discussed, I think, Thursday night, whether we could bring Korbanos b'zman hazeh, that the Korban Pesach has a special law. If Korban Pesach, even if everyone is tamei, we could bring a Korban Pesach. To what Korban is that extent? So we have to learn the sugya.
But not if you're not circumcised.
No, if you're not circumcised, that doesn't help, right?
It's a different thing being uncircumcised and being pure.
Correct. Now we have two mitzvos aseh, that the punishment for not doing them is kares, being cut off from the Jewish people in the world to come. There are many mitzvos lo saseh. Shem says if a man lives with his wife when she's a nida, when she's having her period, or until she becomes pure from that period, then he's going to be cut off from the Jewish people. A terrible punishment. In the world to come, his soul is going to be cut off. And possibly his children are going to die young, and possibly he's going to die young. All kinds of terrible things. Kares is a terrible punishment. But kares is ordinarily a punishment for mitzvos lo saseh. Hashem tells us, don't do A, B, C, D. You can't live with a married woman. You can't live with your sister. You can't live... All kinds of los asays. You can't eat certain fats. What if a person does it, then Hashem says he gets kares. He gets cut off. And he'll live a short life, and his children are going to die young. But there are only two mitzvos asay, positive commandments, that have the punishment of kares. One is the mitzvah of milah. A person has to have a bris milah. And if he doesn't, then Hashem says he's going to be cut off. And the other one is the mitzvah over here of Korban Pesach. That Hashem says if a person doesn't bring Korban Pesach, then he's going to be cut off from the Jewish people. If he has the potential, if he could bring it and he chooses not to, then he's going to be cut off. And then we have a very, very important rule in the Torah. The Torah tells us if we have a ger living in our midst. So you would say a ger, what does he have to do with Pesach? It's our forefathers that left Mitzrayim. Hashem says no. The ger has to bring Korban Pesach just like the Jewish people. And here we have a tremendous revolution, if you want to look at it in a secular view. The Torah tells us there's one law for the ger and for the person who was born Jewish. There's one law. And here the Pasuk tells us that. And that was ideologically a revolution. If you look around at what other cultures did to anyone that tried to join them, and here the Torah, Hashem says, no, in front of me, I like the gerim. I have a special place in my heart for the gerim, and you're supposed to have a special place in your heart for them too. And a ger brings a Korban Pesach, like we discussed in the past. That the ger has the mitzvahs just like every Jew. We're up to Revi. When the Mishkan was built, so a cloud came down and covered the Mishkan. I'm sorry, we skipped something. Let's go back a step. There were people who were impure. There were people who, they found a meis mitzvah. They found a person dead, and no one wanted to deal with that dead person. No one knew who he was. And you could figure no one wanted to deal with him because they all knew if we'll become impure, then we won't be able to bring Korban Pesach. So they looked around and asked, who's his relative? No one knew who was his relative. So these people who found the dead person, they have to deal with him, whether they like it or not. So they dealt with the dead person and they buried him. And then they came to Moshe and they said, it's not fair. Well, why should we lose out? Let us bring the Korban Pesach. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, well, you're impure. So they said, but why should we lose out? We're going to become pure the night of Pesach. So let the Kohanim bring the Korban Pesach for us. And then later on, we'll count by night. We'll have become pure. We'll be sprinkled by day. And when night falls, we'll become pure. And then we'll be able to eat from it. And even if we can't eat from it, let others eat from it, but let them bring a korban in our name as well. Why should we lose out? So Moshe Rabbeinu said, wait, let me see what Hashem tells me. And here we see the great level Moshe Rabbeinu was on. That whenever he had a question, he could turn to Hashem and say, tell me, what do I do here? And we also are supposed to learn out from here that we're not supposed to be embarrassed. We're supposed to say, I don't know. There's a story about a Rav who was learning to get smicha in Panevich. And he wanted to get smicha from Rav Shach. And Rav Shach told him, go through the other Abbeim in the yeshiva, and then you could come to me, and then we'll talk. So he was tested by one Rebbe, and then the next Rebbe, and then the next Rebbe. He finishes all the tests, and then he comes to Rav Shach. So Rav Shach told him, if everyone tested you and they say you know your stuff, so I believe them that you know your stuff. Maybe he asked them a few questions, I don't know. But he said, before I give you your smicha, there's one last thing you have to do. Here's a room. I want you to go inside and close the door and say 100 times out loud, I don't know. Then I'll give you the smicha. And the idea behind it is that, especially when a person is in a position where he's expected to know. My brother told me he had the same thing when I first became a rabbi, so I felt it right away. People ask you and they expect you to know. Well, you're a rabbi, you're supposed to know. No, well, I don't know, what can I do? So it's very tempting to answer. I mean, especially all you guys, when you come home, I'm sure you're the rabbis. You're the guys learning in yeshiva, so everyone's going to ask you questions. That's the way it works. So you have to know. If you don't know, you have to say, I don't know. There's nothing you can do. Moshe Rabbeinu said, I don't know. My brother told me that when he got his medical degree, the same thing happened. Everyone, he's a doctor. You know, you're a doctor. You're supposed to know. Well, if you don't know, you got to say, I don't know. You got to get used to saying, I don't know. So that's what Rav Shach was telling that guy. Go into the room, say it 100 times. Get used to it. Now that everyone told you, you know, you could get the smicha, you could get the official piece of paper, so you have to remember that there's still going to be things you won't know. And so Hashem asked Hashem, what am I supposed to do with these people? They have a claim. They don't want to lose out from the Korban Pesach. Hashem told Moshe, tell the Jewish people that if there's a person that's tamei, impure, or he's distant from the Beis HaMikdash, or in that time the Mishkan, and he can't do the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan, then a month later, on the 14th of Iyar, he has a second chance. Hashem allows him to bring Korban Pesach then. Now, that doesn't mean he has a Yom Tov. He could turn on the light. He doesn't have a Yom Tov of Pesach. He's allowed to have chametz at home. The only thing is, he's not allowed to eat chametz with the Korban Pesach. He's supposed to shech the Korban Pesach, just like a regular Korban Pesach, and eat it with matzah and maror. And after that meal, he could eat chametz. He can't eat the Korban Pesach together with chametz. That's the only thing. But other than that, there are no laws of Pesach other than the Korban. The Korban he brings. If a person was pure and he wasn't far away and he could have brought the Korban Pesach and he just decided not to, so then Hashem says he gets punished with kares. That's what we discussed a second ago. Now we're at Revi. When the Mishkan was built, so a cloud came down and settled on the Mishkan. And at night, there was some vision of fire was over the Mishkan till morning. And that's the way it always was. They had a cloud over it by day and a vision of fire by night. And whenever it was time to travel, so then the cloud would fold up and would go over Shevet Yehuda, which was on the eastern side, and there would be like a pillar over the tribe of Yehuda. They would blow the trumpets, and we're going to see in a second that the way they blew the trumpets was tekiah, trua, tekiah. Tekiah is a long blow. Right? A trua is, it's unclear what a trua is. We don't know if a trua is three short, relatively short blasts, what we call a shvarim. Or is a trua, or is it both? First the three, and then the short ones. We don't know what a trua is. So that whatever it is, that's why we do so many blowings on Rosh Hashanah, because we're not sure which one it is. But whatever it is, so the two trumpets would blow, trumpets, not shofar, would blow a long blow and then a trua, whichever one the trua is, either three, or the short ones, or the three and the short ones. They knew what it was. We don't know what it was. They did one of them. We just don't know which they did. And then a tekiah at the end. So the whole the people would hear these trumpets blow, and then they'd fold up camp. And Shevet Yehuda would go first, but no one would move until Moshe Rabbeinu would call out and say, Kuma Hashem, arise Hashem, v'yafutzu oyvecha, may your enemies scatter from before you. And that's because we had in the desert when we were traveling, there were three Arons. There was the Aron, which we all know, which was in the Kodesh HaKodashim, Holy of Holies, where the second set of Luchos were, and other things were there. And on top of it were the Kruvim, the angels. That's the famous Aron. There was another Aron, which had the broken Luchos. The broken Luchos that Moshe Rabbeinu came down, that were written by Hashem, they were made by Hashem. And Moshe Rabbeinu smashed them, so what they do with them? So they put them in a second Aron. That Aron would lead them to war. That's why that Aron would have pillars of fire coming out of it, and any scorpions or any enemies that tried to attack us, they would be demolished by what came from that Aron. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu said, Kuma Hashem yafutza ivecha. Hashem, arise and may your enemies scatter. And why do we say Hashem's enemies? Because we're Hashem's people and our enemies are Hashem's enemies. And there are a lot of Kabbalistic things that are hidden in that pasuk. That's why whenever there are times of trouble, so you'll see them kubalim, they blow the trumpets and then they say this. They say this pasuk. This pasuk is supposed to have all kinds of strength, this strength to scatter our enemies. And then they would travel. That's why it was Hashem would guide, but Moshe Rabbeinu also had a hand, that until he said this, we wouldn't travel. Hashem told Moshe, I want you to be like a king. Moshe Rabbeinu was called our king. We say, Vahi Bishurun Melech, when the Jewish people had a king. Who was our king? Moshe Rabbeinu. So Hashem told Moshe, just as kings have trumpets, I want you to have two silver trumpets. And the Kohanim blow the silver trumpets. If what you need is for the people to travel, so that we said, they take both trumpets and blow Tkiah, Trua, and then a Tkiah. If you want to gather the leaders, so then you take one trumpet and you blow a Tkiah, just a long blow, and then the leaders, the Nesim, will know to gather. And if you want all the people to gather, all the Jewish people to gather, so then you take two trumpets and you do one long blow, a Tkiah. So that way they knew these were the three types of blowing. Either a long blow by both trumpets to gather all the people, a long blow by one trumpet to gather the leaders, or both trumpets blowing a long blow, and then a trua, and then again a long blow, and that meant that it was time to travel. That was in the time we were in the desert. And only Moshe Rabbeinu had these two trumpets that the Kohanim blew under his reign. When he was about to pass away, these trumpets were hidden. No one else uses these trumpets, only Moshe Rabbeinu. But we have a mitzvah that in the Beis HaMikdash we should blow chatzotzros. Now what are the chatzotzros in the Beis HaMikdash? When there's a time of danger, when we bring korbanos, when it was a Yom Tov, when it was Rosh Chodesh, we blew the chatzotzros. So the chatzotzros, pasha pshat, is trumpets. But I'm leaving it open. I'm purposely, I don't want to go into it, but remember that we didn't clarify what the chatzotzos are for generations. We have a mitzvah for generations when we're in a time of trouble to blow the chatzotzos, and that was part of our prayer before Hashem. It's supposed to teach us to do tshuva, just like blowing the shofar teaches us to do tshuva, that so too the blowing of the chatzotzos, the blowing of the trumpets. But using the term trumpets might be a misnomer. That has to be defined, whether a chatzotzos is only a trumpet or possibly something else. Now we hit the second year, the second month, the month of Iyar, the 20th of the month, and we travel. We depart from Har Sinai. We're leaving Har Sinai, and we're on our way to the land of Israel. So when did we leave? Let's remember, we said the 20th of the month of Iyar. We travel the way Hashem told us to travel, in the order of the different tribes. And Moshe tells his father-in-law, Yisro, who had many names. He had Yisro, Yeser, Chovav, Reuel. He had a lot of names. He told him, do me a favor, we're going to the land which Hashem told us. We're going to be there soon. They thought they'd be there in a few days. Come with us. Hashem is going to do good for the Jewish people. And Yisro says, no, I'm going back home. Back home, I'm going to teach the people how to be Jewish. And here we see a natural tendency. Once a person learns what's right, the first thing he wants to do is teach other people. But that wasn't necessarily what he should have done. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is telling him. Stick with us. We'll make it good for you. And Yisro refuses. He says, I'll go back home and then I'll come back to you. And he did. He went back to his people. He taught them what it means to be Jewish. And then he came back. And the Jewish people owed him a lot for his having assisted us. And that's why when we came to the land of Israel and we conquered the city of Jericho, we blew our shofros. And the shofros are a sign of the strength of the Jewish people. And they brought down the walls of the city of Jericho. And when we conquered the city of Jericho, we said the city has a lot of good things growing there. That's why it's called Jericho, from the smell. You could smell it from far away. And they said, who's going to take the city of Jericho? We said, no one's going to take it. Whichever tribe builds the Beis Hamikdash for Hashem will get it. So for over 400 years, until the Beis Hamikdash was built, the city of Jericho was given to Yisro's children. Yisro had a child named grandson, great-grandson, called Yonadav ben Rechav. And his offsprings, Yisro's offsprings, they all lived over there in the city of Jericho, which wasn't very big. Now, they weren't allowed to rebuild the city of Jericho, so they were nomads. They lived in tents. Their base was the city of Jericho, but they lived in tents. When we conquered the city of Jericho, we said no one should rebuild it. So they lived there. They got the fruit of the land, but they didn't rebuild it. We traveled from Har Sinai, 3 days' journey, and the Aron went before us, and now we come to the upside-down nuns. If you open the Sefer Torah, depends on the custom. Some have over here an upside-down nun, some have a regular nun, separating between everything we've read until now to this parsha, Vayhi bin... No, a regular nun, not a nun sofit. And it says, Vayhi bin so Aron, Vayomer Moshe, when the Aron would travel, Moshe Rabbeinu would say, Kuma Hashem, arise Hashem, v'yafutzo evecha, may your enemies scatter, v'yanusu misanecha mipanecha, may those that hate you flee from before you. Uvnuchom, when it was time to camp, he would say, Shuva Hashem. Shuva has to be defined, whether it means take rest, settle peacefully. Revivos alfei Yisrael. The Hashem who dwells on 22,000 of the Jewish people. Less than that, the Shekhinah doesn't come down to rest on the Jewish people. The nation started complaining. What were they complaining about? So, it's unclear. It doesn't say what they were complaining. But they were looking for something to complain about. They had spent almost a year by Sinai learning. And now these fresh Geirim, they just learned, they just become Jewish, they're just keeping Torah, they leave Sinai, and we're going to see a downhill slope down till the Meraglim. They're going down, down, down. So first thing they do, they leave Har Sinai. And they're not so upset about leaving Har Sinai. Second thing they do, they're complaining. And Hashem heard them complaining. They were looking for complaints. Said, boy, what a journey we're traveling. Hashem made them travel in 1 day, 3 days journey. Hashem wanted them to get to the land of Israel quickly so they don't mess up. They messed up anyways. We messed up anyways. And they started complaining. Whoa, Hashem took us on such a long journey in 1 day. Complaining. So Hashem sent a fire and a lot of people, people at the edge of the camp were killed. The nation called out to Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu davened, and the fire got buried in the ground. They called the place Taveiro, the place of burning. Now, we had a lot of people who wanted to join the Jewish people when they left Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim said, we want to come too. They were called the Erev Rav, and over here they're called the Asafsuf, those that were gathered with us. They wanted certain things. What did they want? So the Pasuk doesn't say, it says, Hisavu Tava. They wanted something, they coveted something. Chazal tell us they wanted two things. They wanted meat, and they wanted women. And they couldn't complain about the women, so they complained about the meat. So he said, boy, if only we had meat. We remember when we were in Mitzrayim, we had fish for free, and we had all kinds of vegetables, which we don't have. All we have is this man. The man, now the man was a special food. It came down from heaven. And the man would show a person on what level he was. If he was a tzaddik, it would fall down next to his house. If he was less on a level, he spoke freshly to his parents, to his wife, whatever, so it would fall down further from his house. He did something else wrong, he'd have to go travel a long journey to pick up the mun. Everyone would see on what level a person was on based on where the mun fell. You could see right away how he's behaving. And the mun was, you could cook it, you could bake it, you could grind it, you could make it into whatever taste you wanted to. But it was a special food that Hashem made would be swallowed in their stomachs. They never had to go to the bathroom. And Hashem also put them in a situation where they never had leftovers. So,
how do you know they never had to go to the bathroom?
Chazal learned it out from later on. We'll get to that. They said halechem hakelokel. They, from the way they referred to it, Hashem said, I'm giving you something good. If you want to go to the bathroom, you have to go out of the camp and dig a hole. The camp of Israel is huge. I don't want to make you travel that journey. So I'm giving you something that won't make you go to the bathroom. And you're looking to complain about it? The man had a lot of blessings that came with it. But they looked at the downside. There was a downside. Hashem said, I want to keep them on a high level. They said, we never know what we're going to eat tomorrow. Imagine a situation where you never have bread for tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, bread is coming down from heaven. And you're living this way for over a year. You don't have leftovers. You have a morning meal and a night meal, and that's it. So they could have slaughtered the cattle they had with them. They had some source of food. But they were basically living off of the man. So they complained about the man. And Moshe Rabbeinu heard them complaining. What were they really complaining about? They had a problem. They were given the Torah. And some of them had married their sisters. Some of them had married their aunts. It says in the Torah, you're not allowed to marry a sister. It says in the Torah, you're not allowed to marry an aunt. Moshe Rabbeinu, his father, Amram, married his aunt, Yocheved. When the Torah was given, that's it. Moshe Rabbeinu's father had to divorce his mother. A lot of people in the congregation of the Jewish people had to get divorced. And now they're leaving Sinai, and they're starting to live as Jews, and they're complaining. They're missing their wives. They're missing their families. They had a lot of breakups going on, not because they wanted it, but because the Torah told us we can't maintain such a relationship. So they were bochel mishpchosav. They were crying over their families. Each one at the entrance to his tents. Hashem got upset, and Moshe Rabbeinu saw it very badly. They're begging for meat. They're asking to consume meat. They're asking to have what they want. I gave them a way of holiness to live, and they're complaining about it. So Moshe asked Hashem, why'd you do bad to your servant? Why didn't I find favor in your eyes that you gave me the toil of carrying this nation? Did I give birth to this nation? I'm supposed to carry them like a baby to the land that you swore to their fathers. Where am I going to have meat to give this nation? They're all crying, give us meat. I can't carry them alone. It's too heavy for me. And then Moshe Rabbeinu saw that Hashem was about to punish them. So he said, are you going to punish them so badly? If you do that, no, better kill me. I don't want to see them punished that badly. So Hashem said, gather 70 people. Beforehand, the parasha beforehand, when the people complained and people were killed, so the 70 elders were also killed among those people that were killed. You remember we said a fire came down and killed people? Among those people were the 70 elders. Because the 70 elders in the time of Sinai, they had looked when Hashem came down with the Shekhinah, they were eating and drinking, partying, and looking at the holiness of Hashem coming down. So it's as though a person standing and talking to a king and biting, taking a bite out of his bread. And yeah, what did you say? Yeah, that's disrespectful. You don't talk to a king that way. And here Hashem is coming to place his Shekhinah on the Jewish people, and the elders are eating and drinking away. So Hashem said, I don't want to ruin this festive day. But when the time came that the Jewish people left Sinai and they sinned, so then part of the people that were punished were these elders. So we didn't have elders. And Hashem told Moshe, gather 70 people from the elders, from the people who 2 years ago when you were back in Mitzrayim and you were being whipped, there were people who were made policemen, like kapos, in charge of the Jewish people. And they were told, you make sure that these 10 people under you, these 50 people under you, they have to bring this number of bricks. And if they don't, whip them. And if you don't whip them, we'll whip you. Well, these policemen were Jewish people, and they couldn't whip their brethren, and so they didn't. Instead, they try to help them and try to get them to maintain the quota. And when they didn't maintain the quota, these policemen were whipped themselves. And they accepted the beatings and didn't hit the Jewish people that were under them. So these 70 people, Hashem said, you suffered with my people, you'll be great with my people. So they were gathered. And 70 is a spiritual number in the Jewish people. We say there are 70 nations in the world. We bring 70 korbanos on Sukkot. There were 70 elders. Just like this we have in the Sanhedrin, 70 elders in the Sanhedrin and the one Nasi on top of them. So you have an odd number. Here you had 70 elders and Moshe Rabbeinu on top of them. 70 is a very special number by us.
70 years?
Yeah, correct. When the land of Israel, when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, it was thought it would be in desolation for 70 years, correct.
But also every 70 years there's something like a Jubilee? So there's something else like 70.
Could be. I don't remember. I don't know. Could be. No, it could be there is. I don't know. So Hashem tells Moshe, gather 70 of the elders and they'll stand with you. And when I speak with you, then the Shechina will go over to them as well. I'll speak with them also. So Moshe Rabbeinu was in trouble. There are 12 tribes. If he takes 6 of every tribe, he's going to end up with 72. So who's he going to say, this tribe, these two tribes, you only give me 5. So he decided, I'm not choosing. He made lots. And he wrote on 70 of the lots, Zakein, you're going to be an elder. And 2, he left blank. And then he said, each tribe, give me those 6 elders that will represent your tribe. And so 70 got the note that said Zakein, and 2 got a blank note. But what happened was, 2 people were especially humble. One was called Elidod ben Kislon. He was the Nasi, the head of the tribe of Binyamin. And the other one was called, he was called Kimuel ben Shoftan. He was the Nasi of Ephraim. Now they had nicknames. They were called Eldad and Medad. And both these people, even though they were supposed to take lots, and 2 other people got the blank lots, so they were supposed to get the 2 that said Zakein, and they didn't take. They said, we're not fit for this. So 68 lots were taken, or 70 lots were taken, 2 of which were blank, so 2 Shvatim stayed out, and 68 people walked out of the camp. 2 people, Eldad and Medad, stayed inside the camp. So Moshe Rabbeinu went out of the camp with 68 people. And these 2, they stayed behind. They didn't say a word. And then Hashem came down, and he rested on Moshe, and just like one candle lights another candle without losing from its flame, so too Moshe Rabbeinu gave over from his Nebuah to the other people, and he didn't lose anything from it. And they all got the Nebuah that the people would get the special birds that came down for them, the slav, and that they would be punished for the fact that they asked for the meat. And while they're getting this prophecy, the 2 people that are back in the camp, Eldad and Medad, they got a different prophecy. Their prophecy was on a much higher level. The 68 elders that were out there with Moshe Rabbeinu, they had a prophecy about tomorrow. Tomorrow, this is what's going to happen. These 2 people, Eldad and Medad, Hashem said, you humbled yourself, I'll bring you up. And that's a rule in life. Hashem likes when people are humble. Hashem chose the Jewish people because they were humble. So Hashem gave them a prophecy of what's going to be 40 years down the road. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to die, they said, and Yeshua, his student, is going to take over and lead us into the land of Israel. The other 68 Zakenim, we don't know their names. The Torah doesn't tell us. Eldad and Medad, everyone knows. The Torah tells us their names. The other 68 Zakenim, they had a one-time Nevuah. They got Nevuah once together with Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's it. And after that, they served as Zakenim. These 2, Eldad and Medad, they continued being Nevi'im. They continued being prophets. And the other 68 Zakenim, they perished together with the Jewish people during the 40 years we traveled in the desert. But Eldad and Medad, they entered the land of Israel together with the Jewish people. Because they're the Nasim that are recorded at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. That ended.
How do we know the other ones died, though?
I don't know. Good question. I don't know. Maybe it says it, but I don't remember. I don't know. It's written in the Yalkut Mamlois. He brings it, but I don't know where he got it from. Good luck. Yoshua hears this. They're saying, my master Moshe is going to die, and I'm going to take over. So he tells Moshe, imprison them. One pshat says, he didn't say imprison them, he said, make them responsible for things, let them be helpful, let them be the gaboim. If they'll be responsible for helping people, they won't be big in Torah. And then they'll automatically, you won't have a problem that there'll be competition for you. He said, you're our leader, you're our Navi here, what are they doing giving Nevuah without permission from you? And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, what are you jealous for me? Havai, all the Jewish people were Nevi'im. And here we see again Moshe Rabbeinu's Anava. That Moshe Rabbeinu was humble, he wanted everyone to be Nevi'im. Hashem sent the slav, and over here there's a difficult parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu asked Hashem, how are you going to do it? What, are you going to gather sheep from all over and bring the people meat? How are you going to give them so much meat? And Hashem said, what, you think I can't do it? So the question is, what was Moshe Rabbeinu thinking? So there are different explanations as to what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying. When he asked it, did he sin or didn't he sin? There's a machlokes tanoim. What's pshat in the psukim? And Moshe Rabbeinu asked, how are you going to do it? The people got the meat, and some of them died just as they put it in their mouth, and some of them died a little bit later, and some of them died at the end of 30 days. The meat was such a luscious meat that they'd start cooking it in the oven. It would fill up the whole oven, and then they'd take it out of the oven. It was so dripping with fat that they'd put it on top of 13 loaves of bread, and the bottom loaf was so filled with oil that they couldn't eat it. So it was very luscious meat, and the people gobbled it down, and they were punished. They died. The parasha ends with the story of Miriam and Aaron speaking about Moshe Rabbeinu. The Navi tells us that we had three leaders leading us out of Mitzrayim: Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Our first leader in Mitzrayim was Aaron. Amram, Moshe and Aaron's father, he was the Gadol HaDor. But our prophet in Mitzrayim before Moshe Rabbeinu came along was Aaron, his older brother. And Miriam, she led the women, as we see from the beginning. Now, the fact that we had these miraculous clouds surrounding us was from Aaron's chus, because of the merits of Aaron. The fact that we had a miraculous well, we had this huge rock that water just came pouring out of wherever we went, that was because of Miriam. We had the big tzaddikus Miriam. So Moshe Rabbeinu's brother and sister were speaking about his wife, who was an Isha Kushis, the black woman. Chazal tells us, doesn't mean she was a black woman. It means that just like a black person stands out among white people, so too she stood out among people, that she was beautiful externally and internally. She was a beautiful person. She had tremendous midos. She was a very, very fine person. And Moshe Rabbeinu, once Hashem started speaking to him, Hashem told him, tell the Jewish people they could go back to their tents, go back home and be with their wives after they received the Torah. But you stay with me. So Moshe Rabbeinu learned out that he's not allowed to go back to his wife, because Hashem appears to him and talks to him at any second. So he always has to maintain a high level of purity. So Aaron and Miriam, they didn't understand. One time Miriam was talking to her sister-in-law, to Tzipporah, and she asked her, why aren't you putting on beautiful clothes anymore? And she said, well, your brother never looks at it anyways. So Miriam understood from that Moshe wasn't living with his wife anymore, like husband and wife. Chazal tell us that the story evolved because Tzipporah saw all these people getting prophecy, and she said, boy, I pity their wives. So Miriam said, what do you mean? She said, well, if their wives are going to have what happened to me, then I pity them. So Miriam went to Aaron, the big brother, and she said to him, well, Hashem spoke to us. I didn't leave my husband. You didn't leave your wife. Hashem also spoke to us. Now, there are two understandings in Chazal. One understanding says that they said this and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't hear this. The other understanding says they went to Moshe Rabbeinu with the claim and Moshe Rabbeinu didn't say a word. He didn't tell them, you know, I'm on a different level than you. Hashem speaks to me at every second. He didn't say that. And that's why the Pasuk says, Moshe, Ha'ish Moshe, the great man Moshe, was a tremendous Anav, greater than any Anav in the world. No one else was as big an Anav as him. And Hashem suddenly appeared to Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Now Aaron and Miriam were impure. They had just been with they hadn't maintained the level of purity of Moshe Rabbeinu. So they started yelling, bring us water, we can't have this, we can't speak to you, Hashem, we're not fit for this. And Hashem said, you see, when I speak to every other prophet, I speak to them in dreams. I speak to them, they can't stand and speak to me. They're not on the same level as Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, he knows everything. I let him into my whole house. I give him prophecy like no one else. I speak to him. I don't give him hints. The other Nevi'im, they see a vision, and they're supposed to interpret the vision. Moshe Rabbeinu, I speak directly to him. I tell him exactly what I'm supposed to say. Why weren't you scared to speak about my servant, even if it wasn't Moshe? About Moshe, such a great person, even if he wasn't my servant. He's my servant, and he's Moshe Rabbeinu, and you weren't scared to speak about him? Now, who instigated this conversation? Miriam. So Hashem was upset at them. He explained to them why he was upset at them. And then Hashem left, and Miriam had tzaras, something like leprosy. Aaron sees her with tzaras, and he tells Moshe, please, pray for her. Don't hold this against us. Now, here we see a lot of important things. Firstly, they were speaking for his benefit, but they weren't speaking carefully. This is called Lashon Hara. We have a special mitzvah to remember the way Miriam spoke about her brother Moshe. There's a special mitzvah, just like we're supposed to remember to wipe out Amalek, we have a mitzvah to remember this story. Zohar es Asher, the whole story with Miriam we're supposed to remember. And it's supposed to teach us a lesson. If such a great person like Miriam, and all she was talking about was how her brother, maybe he's not better than me, maybe he shouldn't do this. But she wasn't careful enough in the way she spoke about her brother. And we're talking about a tremendous person, Miriam. We're talking about a person, the whole Jewish people waited for her 7 days now, because she had to wait until she was taken back into camp, so the whole Jewish people waited. So we're supposed to learn out for ourselves how careful we have to be with Lashon Hara. Next week we'll have to go through the dates. There's another lesson we learn out from here, and that's Mida Keneged Mida. Miriam was kind, she waited for her brother when he was thrown into the river in the casket, so the whole Jewish people waited for her. Moshe Rabbeinu was carrying Yosef's Aron. We said there were three Aronos in the desert. Moshe Rabbeinu was responsible for Yosef's bones to bring them to the land of Israel. Why did Yosef merit to have this honor? Because when his father Yaakov passed away, Yosef didn't say, "I'm the king." No, he bent down and took care of burying his father. So Mida connected Mida. When a person gives honor, he gets honor. When a person is kind to other people, he gets kindness. Shimshon didn't. He looked. He saw a beautiful woman and he wanted her, so his eyes were gorged out. Avshalom took pride in his hair. He ended up dying by being hung in, by his hair. The Torah constantly shows us that Hashem pays us back the same way we act. And the parasha ends with Miriam getting paid back the kindness that she had for her brother, even when her parents had left the casket in the Nile, in the Suf. They left it there by the reeds. She stood back and she waited and she looked to see what's going to happen with that, my brother. And she was repaid. She waited only a few minutes. And the whole Jewish people waited for her 7 days.